Christian nationalism, because it merges and fuses those identities, gets church and state mixed up in all kinds of ways that are bad for both, that are bad for our pluralistic democracy and bad for the faithful witness, not just of the church, but of all religious identities in this country.
Welcome to Dangerous Dogma, the authority on questioning authority. I'm Brian Kaler, president of Word and Way. You can learn more about us at wordandway.org. In this episode, we're going to have a conversation with Amanda Tyler. She's the executive director of the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty and the lead organizer of the movement Christians Against Christian Nationalism. Now, if you want to know more about Amanda, we actually had her back in episode 7. So if you missed that, you could go listen to it. We're going to be focusing in this conversation about some really current events in the world of Christian nationalism. In particular, we're going to be talking about the Reawaken America Tour that was held over the weekend, May 12 and 13, at Trump Doral in Miami, Florida. Amanda went down there to be part of an effort by national and local Christian leaders to speak out against the Christian nationalism of the Reawaken America Tour. That effort was co-led by Christians Against Christian Nationalism and Faithful America. We've had the head of Faithful America, Nathan Imsel, on the program back in episode 61, so you can hear him talk about his organization as well as the Reawaken America tour. So I was really glad that Amanda could join us to talk about her experience and what she saw firsthand as she was helping offer an important witness against a really disturbing movement that is both distorting Christianity and threatening democracy. And that's why we've written a lot about the Reawaken America tour at our email newsletter, A Public Witness. In fact, a couple of our pieces from when the tour was in Branson won awards recently from the Religion Communicators Council. So you can find all of that by just searching for Reawaken at publicwitness.wordandway.org. And while you're there, if you haven't already, you really should subscribe, as we're dealing with not only this topic, but a number of other important issues at the intersection of faith, culture, and politics. And stay tuned throughout the interview after we talk about the Reawaken America tour and Pastors for Trump and some other issues related to what Amanda experienced in Miami. We'll be talking about issues of Christian nationalism at the Supreme Court, in state legislatures like in Texas, and more. So here's my interview with Amanda Tyler of BJC and Christians Against Christian Nationalism. Well, Amanda, first of all, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Brian.
Yeah, I'm really excited to, of course, have you back to talk about anything, but particularly about what we're going to be talking about. You went down over the weekend to Miami, but not on vacation. You were heading to Trump Doral for the latest iteration of Reawaken America. And I guess I got to assume when you took the job as head of the Baptist Joint Committee, heading to a Trump property probably wasn't on your bingo card.
No, this was not a place. And I was there as a visitor, not a guest. So I still haven't stayed at a Trump property.
So let's talk about this event. And first, maybe we should set the full stage, because, I mean, like we have been doing at Word and Way, you've been following Reawaken America for probably about a year and a half, and you're very familiar with what's been happening. So let's talk big picture about what is Reawaken America? Why has the BJC and Christians Against Christian Nationalism been paying so much attention to this tour? And then after that, we'll kind of move into thinking about the Miami example.
Yeah, well, the Reawaken America tour first got on my radar in late 2021 when there was a gathering in San Antonio, Texas, and Michael Flynn, who is one of the leaders and main speakers at these events, said the quiet part out loud. He said, you know, we have one nation under God in this country. We should have one religion. And this idea of this thorough fusion of religion and government, that religion should take over government, that it's government's job and responsibility to see over religion in this country. That's incredibly alarming, and of course, is what we think of as how Christian nationalism threatens religious freedom in this country. So ever since then, I have been watching the Reawaken America Tour. I've been watching your reporting, Brian, on the Reawaken America Tour. I've also seen the Frontline documentary and spoken with that reporter for stories that they had on the tour. And then for a few months ago, I guess, when we heard that this particular event would be at a Trump property, thought, well, this would be the time for us to go in person and to have a counter witness to the tour. I will say, for the past several months, I've been working with colleagues at Faithful America to help train clergy to speak out against the Reawaken America tour when the tour visits their local area. And how this work intersects with our broader work at BJC is that Christian nationalism as an ideology is so thoroughly infused with these tour events that we see real concerns with what this leads to in terms of political violence and threats to our democracy, that we think it's important for Christians in particular to speak out against the tour. And when they come to certain communities and local media might be covering it, it's an opportunity to show a different way of being Christian and Christian concerns in particular about Christian nationalism.
Yeah, and of course, I know you often are very good about making sure that we define our terms. And so as we're talking about Christian nationalism, maybe we should go ahead and make sure people know what you mean when you use that term.
Yeah, so we at Christians Against Christian Nationalism define it this way. Christian nationalism is a political ideology and cultural framework that seeks to merge Christian and American identities. It suggests that to be a true American, one has to be Christian and a certain kind of Christian who espouses fundamentalist religious beliefs that are in line with conservative political positions. And Christian nationalism is therefore fundamentally anti-democratic. It threatens religious freedom for all because it creates second-class citizenship status for anyone who doesn't fit into this narrow category of what it means to be Christian and American at the same time. And it also threatens a faithful Christian witness because Christian nationalism at its heart is idolatrous. It fuses religious and political authorities that leads us in ways that lead us to worship government over God and to sacrifice our theological convictions, which for us as Christians are at the heart of a gospel of love, that we are called to love God and to show that love for God through love of neighbor. And Christian nationalism leads us astray off that calling and commandment of Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously this connects so well with the work that BJC has historically done for decades and that Baptists for centuries have fought for in religious freedom, religious liberty for all, and church-state separation. So it seems like a very natural area for you all to be focusing on.
Absolutely. I think Christian nationalism is the single biggest threat today to religious freedom in our society because it does cut against that fundamental foundational principle, constitutional principle, that our belonging in American society should never depend on what we believe or how we worship or how we identify religiously or even if we claim a religious identification at all. We also think that foundational to that idea of the separation of church and state is the church doesn't try to do the job of the state. The state doesn't try to do the job of the church. Christian nationalism, because it merges and fuses those identities, gets church and state mixed up in all kinds of ways that are bad for both, that are bad for our pluralistic democracy and bad for the faithful witness, not just of the church, but of all religious identities in this country.
Yeah, so with all that in mind, then, the Reawaken America tour for like the 19th stop decided to head to a Trump property, which is really significant because it's been a very Trump-supporting movement. Not only does Eric Trump usually speak, sometimes Donald Jr. speaks. Donald Sr. often calls in at some point to someone to hold the phone up to the microphone. But also a number of the preachers are talking about how God had chosen Trump to be president. God has chosen Trump to be president for a second term. And so it's a very heavy Trump Christian nationalism that's offered at these events. So this was really significant that it was going to be at a Trump property for the first time.
Yeah. And I found that flavor of Trumpism even more so being in the crowd, right? You see it from the stage, you hear it from the speakers, but the people there were wearing MAGA hats or Trump paraphernalia. It very much felt, I've never been to a Trump rally, but I felt like a Trump rally with Jesus interspersed throughout the event. And I don't know if it was more so because it was at a Trump property or not. But it was very much about Trump and about Christian nationalism.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it was more because it felt heavy. I mean, as you know, I went in person in Branson last November. And I mean, the Trump was very, it is definitely a different experience being in person as opposed to just watching the live stream. And it does feel like a Trump rally. I did actually go to a Trump rally in 2016 in Iowa. And so I've experienced both sides of that. But yes, it's like a Trump rally with a lot more Jesus, both on the stage, but then also on the shirts and other things
exactly.
That people are carrying. But before you went into Reawaken, there was actually kind of a pre-event this time, which had not happened. There's a group that has been started by Jackson Lehmeyer, who's been a regular speaker. I think he has spoken at pretty much every Reawaken America event. And he has started a group called Pastors for Trump. They've held a couple of online events prior to this past week with Roger Stone and Michael Flynn, you know, the normal people I think of when I think about pastors, and then Donald Trump on one occasion to promote Trump as president in 2024. They're very open that that's what this organization, Pastors for Trump, is about, Trump winning next year. So they were holding their first in-person event Thursday night, and you went. What was that like?
Well, once we found it. It was a little difficult to find on the property. I mean, that was another thing. There was no security at all. There was no need to show. We did have tickets, but we didn't even have to show tickets to get into the room. But once we found the room, it was standing room only. It was packed. But it didn't appear to me to really be a pastor's event. There were just a lot of people who had come for kind of a pre-party to the Reawaken America tour is what it felt like to me. And when we first got there, there was a musical artist who was performing in a way that really was very moving to the crowd there. You know, it really got people, I think, into this kind of spiritual space. The songs themselves had nothing to do with politics, you know, but everything else did after that, right? There was a lot of religion on the front end and then a lot of politics on the back end. I think it was billed as a prayer meeting, but there was very little praying going on. It felt much more like a political rally. And even the prayers that were spoken were political calls to action more than what I'm used to in prayer meetings.
At least there wasn't much praying with an A in how we spell that. So
yeah, true. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, then the next day, let's start with Reawaken first. You went in for part of Reawaken as well the next day. What was that like? I mean, we already kind of hinted at it. It was different being in person. But what did you experience from inside that perhaps surprised you that you hadn't seen from all the other times that you've been watching and paying attention to this?
Yeah, I think for one thing, this was both, there wasn't a big difference between the crowd or the speeches at the prayers at the Pastors for Trump and the Reawaken America tour. I think so in both of those events, you know, one is, and you are a better person than I am, Brian. You've watched like all of these videos. Like I can only stomach a little bit of it. So
I'm glad
I think
that you
that
said
you...
that makes me a better person. There's other ways you could have described that.
Glutton for punishment. I don't know. But you really, I think, have one of the best feels for how all of these events go. I do think it is rather repetitive. I think you hear a lot of the same themes, a lot of the same language, speaker after speaker. And when I've been asked about these events in the past, again, from just watching online, people ask, well, is it a political event or a religious event? And I've often said, it's really a political event that just uses Jesus, you know, and just uses religious language to get at a political cause. And I still think that that is the case for the organizers and the leaders and the speakers, but for the people there, I felt like it was very much a religious experience for them. I saw people being kind of religiously moved and emotionally moved in ways that I'm familiar with from other religious experiences. I saw people kind of praying individually and also meeting each other and encouraging each other, encouraging people to go get baptized on the patio while Mike Lindell was speaking from the main stage that had nothing to do with religion or Jesus, you know. And so I came away, I think, with a different feel for this, that this very much is a religious cause for many of the people who are there, but that the religion and the politics are so merged that they can't tell the difference. And so I also got a feeling for what lines got the biggest applause and what got the biggest response. I think very dangerously, it was the calls for violence. It was calls that talked about guns or about Second Amendment rights. And I felt like the appeals to political violence were very thinly veiled in this space, in ways that I think we need to be paying pretty close attention, given that that is layered in with continued election lies, as well as, and I, you know, this sense that I heard this several times in the conference, even the parts that I was there, but that you can only trust what you've learned here, that everyone else in the broader world is lying to you. All of mainstream media, which includes Fox News, they are off on Fox News now that Tucker Carlson is gone. So everyone else is lying to you. You have to get your information from us. You have to get it from this conference, that's what they called it a conference or a master class, you know, that you're getting the best information here that you can then go share with your networks at home and on social media. And so creating this self-contained echo chamber of misinformation and how people really seem to be paying attention and taking notes and taking this in and going to the websites as they were being referenced from people and signing up for things. You really felt like they were doing what looked like pretty effective organizing. But for those of us who are concerned about democracy, that needs to be very troubling because this group does seem to be coalescing around misinformation, using the language of Christian nationalism and this political religious experience to galvanize them.
Yeah, I think that's all correct. I mean, I think your experience matches what I felt when I went in Branson, was seeing this as even more of a religious event than I had before. And in fact, my write-up on Branson frames it as a church service because they're using, I mean, there's the praise music, and we go straight from, you know, singing praise songs that you and I hear in our churches on an average Sunday, to a talk about why COVID was a fake pandemic, to another, you know, time of prayer, to how the 2020 election was stolen. And it's just seamlessly all together, as if the worship songs and the times of prayer are there to sanctify and to bless. You know, they're not like an add-on. It felt like it really was all of this now has been baptized as a message from God with the religious liturgy added in there. And I think that's really significant for then Christians to recognize that it's not just that they're taking some of our Christian language or they're saying this is what God believes. I mean, they are enacting this as if this is, you know, their church. This is a service of worship.
Yeah, and they would say things too, invoking scripture, you know, for such a time as this, you know, to say, this is your purpose in life. Your purpose is to fulfill, is to be in this moment at this particular time, to stand up for what is right, to stand against election laws, to help keep Trump in office, you know, and because, again, it's been prophesied that he is going to be elected again. And so you're part of this prophecy. And this is all about, you know, being a warrior for Jesus. Like it is, it's just completely infused in everything that's going on. And you could almost see when they would have those moments of prayer or of song, how that would bring people back in, right? And keep them engaged in the rest of the misinformation, lies that were being fed throughout the program.
Yeah. And you mentioned the baptism time. And I don't know for you, I mean, for me, that was the part of the entire weekend. And when I went in Branson, I was there for the whole thing. But that was the part to me that was the most angering, almost deadening, like frustrating. You know, it was the most soul sucking, if you will, because it was to see this sacred rite being used. I mean, it's like, what are they even being baptized into? And there was hundreds of people at the event that I were in that lined up when they were getting prayed over, and, you know, some of them were being anointed, and then they were going into the swimming pool to be baptized. And that to me, as a Baptist, I mean, baptism is pretty central to us. You know, I was like, what is happening here?
Yeah, I'd heard reporting from others, non-Baptists, about the baptisms, and some of the reporting was focused on just, this is weird immersion baptism thing. Of course, for you, you know, for us, Brian, that's not the weird part, right?
That's right.
We understand. We, I was dunked, you know, so I understand what the full immersion baptism is about. And that's not the weird part. The weird part was seeing that sacred symbol be co-opted for induction into some other kind of society, right? And there was, I don't know how many people were baptized that day, but it was a very long line. There was a blow up little plastic kiddie pool on the porch outside the main ballroom. And what struck me, I stood there for several minutes and watched these. I describe it as an assembly line baptism. And someone would sit down, they would maybe ask their name, and they would just dunk them. There was no liturgy. There was nothing that looked or felt like what baptisms look and feel like to me. There was, you know, certainly no relationship that this person had with the people that they were that were baptizing them. But it also did create that question: what exactly are you being baptized into? And of course, they were wearing whatever they had on at the conference, which was usually a Trump shirt, a Reawaken America shirt, a QAnon shirt. I saw someone wearing was disturbing to see baptism used in this way. But again, for the people who were being baptized, it was a religious experience. I saw people kind of counseling each other. Oh, I just did it. You have to do it. It's so wonderful. I saw people walk away with tears in their eyes. And then they would sometimes get in the next line, which was for a blessing from this prophetess who had spoken earlier in the conference, who was then giving assembly line healings to people in a way that I watched her for a while and saw how disingenuous it all was, but not for the people who were receiving the healing or the blessing.
So, I mean, obviously, this is something that we find very, very disturbing. We see it as hijacking our faith, which is why you were in Miami. You weren't there just to observe it, but you joined other Christian leaders from Florida and across the country to speak out against it. And this is something that Faithful America and Christians Against Christian Nationalism have been helping have these events. We did one in Branson with some local pastors to speak out against the Reawaken America and the Christian nationalism that it offers. So I want to tell about that event and this attempt to offer an alternative witness.
Yeah, and we did intentionally choose this particular event because it was at a Trump property to have our more national response, which I think was right because the people who were attending the Reawaken America tour, it seemed to come from all over. At the Pastors for Trump, they started calling out different states. So this was not a local event. This was a national event that drew people from all over the country. And so we thought it was an important moment, especially if we were going to have national media focused on this event, to show that, no, these people at this conference do not speak for all of Christianity, and that there is actually an organized response, both in the form of Christians Against Christian Nationalism, the project that BJC coordinates in cooperation with a number of different groups, but also the broader community that's concerned about Christian nationalism. And our particular response was organized with Faithful America, who has been organizing some of the counter events around the country. And so we both organized a press conference that happened on Friday at the same time that the conference was going on, at a nearby church where we had several faith leaders, again, national and local, give remarks about our concerns with Christian nationalism and the Reawaken America tour in particular. And then we also had some advertising that was traveling around Miami throughout the weekend, both on a boat that was sailing on the Miami River, and then also on some mobile billboards that were driving around the Trump property, so that not just, again, this advocacy was not so much directed at the people who are attending the Reawaken America tour, but at the broader community who might be hearing about the news about the event, and who would just be heartened, we hope, to see that there was a Christian response to the Christian nationalism that was being peddled at the Reawaken America tour.
Yeah, and I think that's so important. I mean, obviously, so the truck's been at a number of these events, and we had one in Branson with the similar billboard going up and down the strip, which is, you know, all these entertainment, you know, shows and so forth. So that was kind of fun because some of them are kind of wild and extravagant. They kind of fit in as this, you know, just one more carnival show there in town. But I especially love the fact that there was the boat in Miami. That just, that seemed so fun to have a, it's so appropriate for Miami, so Florida to have a boat.
Exactly. Exactly. And it was a team effort, but with our friends at Faithful America, but also Guthrie Graves at Simmons at BJC worked hard to get the boat and get the advertising. And, you know, and I think it served its purpose, to not just for the people in Miami who saw it, but for people around the country who were pleased to see that there was a response, an organized response to the tour.
And of course, you know, as you noted, it's not necessarily for those inside at the event, but Michael Flynn has complained about the truck billboards at previous Reawaken. So he knows that the opposition is out there and is organizing. So that's always fun, too, to make sure that he sees that.
Yeah, absolutely. And they did talk some about, you know, the detractors or the people who are who say things about them. So the fact that they're talking about that at the event means that it's penetrating in some ways, in ways that are causing them to have to answer to their crowd. You know, I think it was Mike Flynn who said at the Pastors for Trump event, you know, they say we're making these things up, but we're not, you know, so they're repeating some of the lines that we are saying, right, to their people.
We'll be right back with the rest of this conversation. But first, I want to remind you that you should subscribe to Warden Way's award-winning e-newsletter, A Public Witness. It will help you make sense of the world of faith, culture, and politics. Learn more and subscribe today at publicwitness.wardenway.org. And now, back to our conversation. So obviously, this isn't the only thing that's happening right now in the world of Christian nationalism and the work of BJC. So I wanted to kind of pivot and talk about some other important issues that I know you have been tracking and following. And particularly, if we're thinking about Christian nationalism right now, outside of last weekend in Miami, I mean, it's hard to think of a place that has made more headlines in the last month than your home state.
True.
So what's been going on deep in the heart of Texas?
Everything's bigger in Texas, right? Including Christian nationalism. Yeah. So, you know, I am not surprised to see what's going on in Texas, in part because I actually was down there at the beginning of the legislative session speaking to a group of advocates that was organized by Texas Impact, which is an interfaith public policy and advocacy group that is based in Texas. And some of the leaders at Texas Impact were telling me, you know, we've been in Texas a long time. This is the most extreme legislature we've ever seen. And so, you know, I think they felt like that there was a wave of bills coming. And so what I think is happening in Texas is, you know, Texans being Texans, wanting to be out there and in front and really pushing the envelope in a lot of these bills, also sensing with some recent Supreme Court cases with weakening protections for church-state separation and religious freedom, an opening to go for some more extreme legislation and trying to test what some of the constitutional limits might be for some of these bills. And then just really extremist lawmakers. You know, I think what we see is the effect of decades of redistricting in Texas, that has resulted in the most extreme candidates being elected to office because they will be tested in primaries. And so you have some really extreme public policy positions that are being put forward. The bill, we are tracking a number of bills that are happening in Texas. One that we've talked about a couple of times on our podcast, Respecting Religion, is the bill that has passed the Texas Senate. It's pending in the Texas House that would require the posting of the Ten Commandments in every public school classroom in Texas. And, you know, what's so galling about that piece of legislation is the proponents are claiming it as an act of religious freedom, when in fact, it is an incredible infringement on religious freedom for the government to be endorsing a particular religious text and an edited version of a religious text at that, and imposing it on all Texas school children in an environment, of course, in which kids are incredibly impressionable and are compelled to attend in compulsory public education. So really concerning to see that happen. Also, some bills that are testing limits of government-sponsored prayer and Bible readings in public schools, a bill that has now passed both houses of the Texas legislature that would replace Texas school counselors with chaplains. And I think all of these bills, including others that are pending, you know, show a pretty concerted Christian nationalist agenda and trying to make the most of what is a very short legislative session. Texas legislature only meets 5 months every 2 years. Thankfully, their session is almost over, so there's not that much more time. Time is running out for their bad ideas, and hopefully some of these bad ideas will die before the end of the session, but they have done a lot of damage in the interim.
Yeah, there's that in states where there's, you know, more bad bills than good bills. Like Missouri just finished its legislative session on Friday while Reawaken was happening. There's that moment where they all throw all the paper bills up into the air and all these hundreds of bills suddenly die, and it can be a nice happy moment to see all these bills suddenly die.
We're hoping for that for some of these bills that remain pending right now, but we're not just hoping. We're encouraging people in Texas to be advocates against these bills, and from whatever their perspective is. But particularly, people who are Christian, I think, have an important responsibility to stand up and say these are not bills that support my religious freedom, because that's what they're being pushed by. Lawmakers who are Christians, who are claiming that we need to put God back in the public schools and that this will solve all of our public policy problems. And Christians have a really strong role to play in advocacy. You've done a great job for at that in your state of Missouri, Brian. But we've seen Texans stand up to these bills. The Ten Commandments bill, for example, you know, once it came to the House committee, there were far more many people who are registering against the bill than for the bill. And so we see grassroots advocacy. Whether that makes a difference to this legislature, we're not so sure. But we think it's important for people to raise their voices.
Yeah. And of course, if people were kind of listening to some of the bills that you were just listing, I mean, they're the ones in Texas that you highlighted are pretty much all focused on public schools. And I mean, obviously, part of that is because of the Bremerton Supreme Court decision, which is what they're kind of trying to test now. How much further can they push it? But also, it seems like on Christian nationalism, that public schools are they're very much a clear target. And I think it was even highlighted well at the press conference that you all held in Miami, where one of the speakers was one of the co-founders of Pastors for Florida Children. And he was talking about the importance of public education there and some of the attacks on public education in Florida. So what is it about public education that seems to be something that those that are pushing Christian nationalism are so focused on?
Well, I think a number of things. One, you know, when we look at Christian nationalism in the culture and look at kind of how prevalent it is among different age groups, the older you get, the more likely you are to hold Christian nationalist views. I think by pushing Christian nationalism narrative, by telling an alternative version of history, by telling an alternative version of government and civics, you're you know, teaching a next generation bad facts about about history and American government in ways that perpetuate Christian nationalism. And if Christian nationalism is going to survive, then you have to keep indoctrinating people into its ideology. And 90% of America's kids still go to public school. That's a place that the government has control over the curriculum. And so we see that not just in Texas, but in Florida, for instance, where you have policies that are rewriting history, rewriting government and civics in a way that don't tell an accurate version of American government, but rather perpetuate Christian nation mythology. I also think, yes, to your point, the Kennedy versus Bremerton case is giving them a legal argument, not a good one, by the way, but a legal argument that they would somehow be on solid constitutional footing to pass these bills. I do not believe that to be the case. But we can see a more concerted effort over several years of pushing these bills through the public schools, because these bills are just the next stage from some of the bills from the Congressional Prayer Caucus Foundation and Project Blitz that pushed, for instance, the posting of In God We Trust in all the public schools. So I think that in general, you try to bring people together around policy for education. This is something that can unite us. And so they are attempting to, I think, corner legislators into this box to say, are you for education? Are you for God? Are you for God and education? And some people are falling for that, right? Whereas we know that it's not like you can take God out of any sphere of our society. What we are trying to say no to is government-coerced religion, government-sponsored religion, government picking and choosing between religions, government taking the job or feeling like they have any responsibility over religion at all. And that's where we see a lot of missteps in the public education realm in particular. I also think it's interesting, you know, who can't vote in this society? Public school children. They're the one group of people who can't vote these people out, and they're the ones who are most impacted by these policies. Of course, their parents are as well, but they're the ones. It's the kids in these classrooms who are going to have to deal the most with these bad policies. And so it's up to all of us, whether we have a child in public school or not right now, to take an active role and to be really concerned about what's going on with this, I think, very concerted effort to push Christian nationalism in public schools.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit of it already about the Kennedy-Bremerton case, which came down about 11 months ago. I mean, we're getting to that time of year, you know, May and especially June, where a lot of the big Supreme Court decisions come down. And I know that that's obviously something that you at BJC spend a lot of your time focusing on and looking at. And so that was a significant case. Obviously, it was a case that we found very problematic. So what's on your radar that you're looking at as people are listening to this and they're thinking, okay, I'm going to start seeing decisions dropped? I mean, last year, I feel like the Supreme Court got a little bit more attention because of the Dobbs decision. But, you know, there's a lot of important decisions coming in the next month and a half. What is on your radar that you think our listeners should be paying attention to?
Yeah, well, there are this, you know, promised to be a very impactful and possibly negatively impactful Supreme Court term again. And there are some high profile cases that we're waiting on that deal with affirmative action and voting and elections and all of this. And so we should all be paying attention to all of those cases. We at BJC are watching two cases in particular, one called 303 Creative versus Alanis, that has to do not with the First Amendment's religion clauses, but with the First Amendment's free speech clause and how that impacts a private businesses, in this case, a private business that provides wedding websites, and whether they can turn away same-sex couples from the business. So we're watching that case. And then the other case we're watching is a case called Groff versus DeJoy that has to do with accommodating an individual's religious exercise in the workplace. And this was a case that I actually attended oral arguments several weeks ago and and watch. And I honestly don't know how that case is going to come out. That, you know, sometimes you come out of a case really having a good feel for things. But I thought there was a lot of questioning from some of the conservative justices about the arguments made by the individual in that case, the employee. And so we're not really sure how they're going to draw lines and what tests they're going to apply in that case. BJC did file a case on behalf of the employee in that case and about having a more meaningful standard, a more robust standard to protect religious exercise in the workplace. So we'll be interested and, of course, watching closely to see how that case comes out. We expect decisions in all of the Supreme Court cases by the end of June.
So you've already highlighted a few key things, but I wanted to end by giving you a chance to give a plug for where are the ways that people can learn about BJC and Christians Against Christian Nationalism and ways to get involved.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. You can follow BJC on all kinds of social media channels at BJC on the Hill. You can follow me on Twitter at Amanda Tyler BJC. You can find us online at bjconline.org. And you can listen to our podcast, Respecting Religion, where we cover religion, the law, and what's at stake for faith freedom today. We have weekly episodes on Thursdays, more or less, during the Supreme Court term. So that'll be through June, and we'll be covering decisions as they come out there. And then you can get involved with our work at Christians Against Christian Nationalism at ChristiansAgainstChristianNationalism.org. We're on social media on Instagram and on TikTok at End Christian Nationalism. And especially if you're a Christian listening to this, we'd love for you to join our growing movement. We're at over 33,000 in our movement now. You can join us by signing a statement of principles that's available at ChristiansAgainstChristianNationalism.org. And you can also access a number of resources and get signed up so you can attend future educational webinars like you, Brian, helped lead earlier this year on Christian nationalism in the public schools and trainings about how to get involved in your local area.
So I noticed that you pointed out that you were on Twitter, but you mentioned Christian nationalism, Christians Against Christian Nationalism on TikTok, but you're not doing the TikTok yourself, though.
I am not on TikTok. We have a TikTok native, a Generation Z person on our team, who Georgia McKee, who curates our TikTok and does an incredible job with it. I am very proud to say our TikTok has gone viral. We're at over 20,000 followers on our TikTok, and I think we're reaching another generation and segment of people than my generation, at least, on TikTok. And it's going to take all generations working together to dismantle this ideology.
Well, Amanda, thanks, as always, for all the work that you are doing. I really appreciate it. And thanks for joining us on the program today.
Oh, thank you so much. And for all of your work, too.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Dangerous Dogma. You can find more information and links in the show notes at dogma.wordandway.org. And don't forget to check out our website, wordandway.org, to learn more about our other offerings, including A Public Witness, a subscriber e-newsletter to help you make sense of faith, culture, and politics. If you've enjoyed this episode, I hope that you will share it with your friends on Facebook and head over to iTunes or your favorite podcast platform and write a positive review. It really will help more people to find the show. If you'd like to give to support this program, we greatly appreciate it. And all you have to do at wordandway.org is hit the donate button. And whatever you give there will help support the production of this podcast, as well as our website, monthly magazine, and other offerings. If you have any comments or feedback about this program, you can send those to me at bkaylor@wordandway.org. Thanks for listening.